Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 142nd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include comedian and author, along with podcast host Jen Kirkman, will be talking about her new podcast, Anxiety Bites. We'll also visit with one of the founding members of the Blue Oyster Cult, Albert Bouchard, about his new project, Imaginos 2, Bombs Over Germany, Minus Zero and Counting, which is available now. We'll also visit with horror actor extraordinaire Bill Moseley about his new movie, Prisoners of the Ghostland, with Nick Cage. We'll also visit with former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, about his new book, Beyond Biden. And we'll visit with our good friend and country singer-songwriter, Hayden Haddock, about his new single, Wind It Down. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Now, the term dad bod has been around for a few years now. You know, that's where you're still got some muscle tone, but don't shy away from pizza and beer. And now clothing companies have started to cater to that look. According to a new report, more and more men's t-shirts are tighter up top to accentuate your chest and show off the guns, but looser around the waist to make room for a gut. So kind of like the opposite of slim fit. Now, we haven't seen the term dad bod fit used yet, but brands like True Classic Tees are specifically going after the dad bod demographic. They're marketing their shirts to guys who feel like they're between sizes, where extra large is too baggy up top, but a large is too tight around the waist. Got comedian, podcast host, and best-selling author on the list as well, Jen Kirkman, with us. Got a new podcast to talk about, Anxiety Bites. And first off, Jen, I appreciate you taking some time to be on the show.
I'm always happy to promote something that is about helping people with anxiety. So I thank you.
Yeah. Now, when did you know that you had a battle with anxiety? How early in life were you diagnosed, I guess? And how did that lead you down the road to where we're at today, if you will?
Well, I was diagnosed when I was 19 or 20, but I've had anxiety since I was 8, and I'm now in my 40s. So it was many years of, you know, when I was a little kid, I developed a phobia of airplane travel. You know, I'm just this little kid. My parents are taking me to Disney World and I am flipping out on the plane to the point where I had to say, let's not go to Disney World once a year anymore. I don't like the flight, you know? And then I started having panic attacks. And, you know, if people listening don't know what a panic attack is, it's that sensation where you feel like you can't breathe and your mind comes in and says, oh, you're going to die. And, you know, a lot of people end up thinking they're having a heart attack. And so that was so scary because, again, if, you know, for anyone young out there, this is the 1980s, early 90s. There's no internet. And back then you were either normal or crazy, you know? And I don't know if you've seen those cartoons where someone's going blah, 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 like Bugs Bunny. I thought I'm going to live in a padded room or I'm going to hide this my whole life. So my plan, which is not a good plan, I don't recommend anyone do this, is hide whatever this is so that, you know, and when it gets really bad, I guess I'll want to live in that padded room. You know, I mean, it's so sad. It's funny now, but it was like kind of sad if you think about it. So it wasn't until I was, you know, about 20, I took a class at the airport for people who had a fear of flying. And that's a very socially acceptable thing to admit, right? You know, it's pretty weird to go in a plane. And it was taught by a psychiatrist. He was really funny. He would smoke and drink coffee during class. Again, this is the 90s. You could do that kind of thing. And he was great. And he really made it seem like it was no big deal. But he came up to me after the class was over and said, you know, I think you might have just generalized anxiety besides this fear of flying. And I said, oh, well, what do I do about it? And he said, you go see, you know, a psychologist to talk to, and they'll give you new tools. So it was because of his attitude where he's smoking, drinking coffee, going, you guys, there's nothing to be afraid of, that made it seem like I didn't have something that was maybe scary and bad. And he seemed more annoyed with us than concerned for us, you know? So it was really that I got to give it up to Dr. Al. He's now dead. But so that was sort of my journey. Was I didn't know anything until like 12 years after I'd had all of these terrible sensations.
So when the podcast world kind of blew up and you've been writing, doing comedy, when did the podcast idea itself come to fruition for you?
Well, I have another podcast that absolutely nobody needs to go run and listen to. It's just a silly podcast that I had for the last 7 years that, you know, most comedians have a podcast.
Right.
But this particular podcast I wanted to do because in my stand-up, I would talk about anxiety. And audience members would come up to me and say, I have anxiety. I don't know what to do. And they were young. They were like 20. And I would think, well, wait, I didn't know what to do when I was your age because we didn't have the internet. But you guys, I mean, you got it made. Go Google anxiety, figure it out. And they were like, no, we don't even know where to begin. And I realized I'm totally wrong about young people, that they don't have it any easier than me. You know, once they start looking, maybe it's a little easier to find information, but people don't know where to start and they still think it's like something scary. And so, yeah, right around COVID, like during the lockdown, I thought, you know, I don't really feel like touring. I'm not writing any new jokes. Maybe I can use my sense of humor and my, you know, now 20 something years of anxiety coping to help people. So I pitched the idea to iHeartRadio and they said, sounds good. I figured, you know, I'm not an expert, but I can talk to experts. So that the idea came about during the big lockdown of 2020. I think I would have ended up doing something like this anyway, of course, but it really hit home to me after years of touring and meeting anxious people and then looking online and just noticing, oh, wow, everyone's pretty anxious. And I think they had this before the lockdown. It just sort of blew it up, you know?
I understand. And, you know, people think that radio guys can open a mic and talk anywhere. I'm good as long as I'm in with four walls around me. I'm good. You get me in an open area in front of people, it's a whole different thing. So anxiety affects different people different ways, obviously. And I know that you've talked with, like you mentioned, experts for the show. And what are some of the maybe the eye-opening moments that you've had so far?
One of the experts I talked to was this guy named Dr. Judd Brewer, who is a psychiatrist, but it wasn't until he went back to school to study neuroscience that he realized there was a lot of things they didn't teach him in his PhD schooling. And one of the things he realized was that worrying, which can lead to anxious feelings, is a habit. And so we can almost approach treating our anxiety the way you treat quitting smoking or something like that. Another thing I learned is from another neuroscientist who said, you know, our brain's job is to predict things to keep us safe, but we don't know it's doing it half the time. So like if you're crossing the street or waiting to cross the street, your brain's doing all this predicting about what could happen if you walk out in front of a car. Now you don't feel the sensations of anxiety because you've done it so many times. Your brain goes, right, oh, this thing again. But if you're in a new situation, your brain's going, oh, what is this? Let me predict. Let me go back in the files and see if we've done this before. Oh, we haven't. And that's when your body might start to produce some adrenaline, some shortness of breath. You're just kind of, it's almost like, you know, in your computer when it's starting up and you get that little roundy thing going, we know the computer is going to start. We don't go, oh my God, it's broken, and run out to the street. But if we're having a sensation for the first time, it's really a good way to look at it is our brain is just trying to figure out what this is. And so while you're feeling those physical sensations, if you can keep your thoughts from getting on that runaway train, don't listen to your thoughts. Don't listen to, oh my God, the plane's crashing. Oh my God. You know, just say, oh, I'm feeling some sensations. Let me breathe. I mean, honestly, breathing is like the most important thing. We do it right all day long, but the third thing I learned is we always hear about deep breathing, but it's not about taking a huge deep breath. It's actually about like regulating our CO2. So more importantly is like a long out breath. So if you're ever anxious, you know, maybe take a full deep breath, hold your breath, which sounds crazy to do when you're anxious, hold it for a little bit and then exhale for as long as you can. So things like that, where it's like, God, this is totally normal. It's just our brain doing its thing. You know, we jump in. So it's very, for people that don't have a full-fledged anxiety disorder, yes, you can experience anxiety and you're allowed to call it anxiety. It doesn't necessarily mean you even need to go to therapy or anything, but if you recognize what it is, then you can use tools that anxious people use. And the good news is the tools, whether you're just having anxiety once or a full-blown disorder, they're all the same.
And again, the podcast is called Anxiety Bites. And Jen, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find the podcast and all the other works that you've got going as well.
Sure. I mean, if people just go to my website, jenkirkman.com, that is one N in Jen, and it's Kirkman as in man, not land as in the Costco brand. And everything will be there and they can find it on iHeartRadio, wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, everywhere.
Well, Jen, it has been great to visit with you today. Looking forward to checking out the podcast myself and hope you have a great rest of your week.
I do too. And stay safe in your little booth there. It looks very cozy.
Thank you, Jen.
Now, I feel like the only reason to buy these is to prank someone, because that's exactly what couldn't actually taste good, right? Well, hot dog flavored candy canes are here, and they look actually like normal candy canes. Now, the novelty candy company Archie McPhee is selling six packs of them for $6.50, and unfortunately, they're already sold out. But you can sign up to get an email when they have more in stock. Now, they've been selling odd candy cane flavors for a while now, and their actual flavors, their other flavors include bacon, sardines, ketchup, kale, pickles, pizza, and mac and cheese. You can check them out at McPhee.com.
We've got one of the founding members of the Blue Oyster Cult, Albert Bouchard, got a brand new project to talk about. It's actually the second installment we'll talk about. But first off, Albert, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, a pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Now, Albert, tell our listeners a little bit about Imaginos, if I hope I'm pronouncing this correct, and the trilogy that that goes along with that. Where the inspiration was coming up with this one for you?
Well, it was not my idea. I have to give credit where credit is due. It was a story that Sandy Perlman told me in 1967, right after shortly after I met him. And he, at that point, he hadn't written any lyrics. It was just a story. And he started slipping these songs into, when he did start writing songs for Blue Oyster Cult, he'd slip the Imaginos story into these things without actually mentioning, the character Imaginos, like in astronomy, he called Imaginos Desdenova, and also in I Am the One You Warn Me Of, which he wrote shortly after astronomy, but we, that one, and that was originally planned for a Cultosaurus Erectus record, but It never happened. We didn't do that one. We are also supposed to do In the Presence of Another World, and that also did not happen, for one reason. I think that Martin Birch wanted, some other, other kinds of things. And at that point, I was thinking, well, maybe Sandy and I will just do this, ourselves, separate. At the time, Donald was working on getting a, Buck was working on getting a solo deal with Columbia. So, I was like, well, if he can get one, I should be able to get one.
Now, the newest release, Bombs Over Germany, Minus Zero and Counting. Albert, tell our listeners about this one, how excited you are to have the new music out there available for folks as well.
I'm very excited. I mean, I didn't, both the last one and this one came together so quickly. I really was surprised. But on this one, which was not as planned out as the last one, was, that was the plan that we had, Sandy and I. This one, he had kind of mentioned about things, and one of the songs, Independence Day, was not even finished. We hadn't finished it, but he had mentioned that these songs might work in the next chapter of Imaginos, the dark chapter. This is where the mirror, as an agent of evil, causes people to do bad things, and so we have World War I, World War II. We have Vietnam, we have riots, we have serial killers, we have all of this stuff as part of that, and lots of drugs. So that's what's in the Bombs Over Germany, this chapter of the Imaginos saga.
Now, did it become extra dark because of the times that we live in to kind of fit in, Albert, if you will?
No, it was always supposed to be like that. And I don't know if Sandy really predicted what would happen, but certainly it's appropriate for, the times that we are, I think that, in the Reimaginos, there is the plague, which is, the sickness that happens, in the song Gil Blanco County, mm-hmm. But you know, it's called bad oats, but it's really, you know, bad acid or, you know, a virus or whatever, something like that, you know, so, which causes Imaginos to get put ashore by his best friends because they don't want to get sick.
Albert, how much have you had to learn technology? How much of a crash course have you had to take over the last couple of years? Because especially with having to put new music out there, I'm sure you've had to do a little remote work, right?
Well, no, not really. I've been working with computers and I taught for 31 years after I left Blue Oyster Cult. So, and initially when I was in my job, in addition to teaching, I was the IT guy for the. They sent me to, you know, these, you know, Windows classes and, you know, all of this other stuff, you know, because we're using IBMs and Macs. So, and I had a Mac. So I've been doing this for a long time. And now, when I was making the last record, I was mixing a lot of things myself. So I, you know, how it is nowadays, you search YouTube and you do anything really almost, you know. So I would find out all these great mixers and some of their secrets. But this new one, I didn't have time to mix it. I had too many other irons in the fire. So I farmed it out to two of my favorite mixers, you know. So, and they tag teamed the whole thing, you know. It was able to come out this year, you know, which is pretty cool.
How hard is that for you to let somebody else take over those reins? Is that painful for you to turn those over?
No, not. I mean, yes, if it was somebody I didn't know, maybe.
Right.
But I knew guys and I know what kind of work they do. And I just, the other thing is that I had said, you know, people said, are you going to do the other two volumes? And I was like, we'll see how this, you know, this first one goes. And of course, it was successful beyond my imagination. I really didn't realize. So I had the money. The money was there. It was, you know, so I could hire these guys and, you know, and it was so it was wonderful. It was wonderful, you know, and I also had all this help from BOC guys because they weren't that much involved in the last one. Whereas this one, they were, you know, I bounced ideas off them. I sent them all the rough mixes and, you know, said, what do you want to do? You know, and so both Donald and Joe gave me complete tracks, like the whole track was by them. And then I just added my thing, you know. You know, so, it was great.
That's great. Good stuff. Well, again, Albert Bouchard's Imaginos, Bombs Over Germany, Minus Zero and Counting. I'm trying to get all of that in there. Albert, it's been great to visit with you. I want to make sure and let our listeners know where to keep up, where they can find the music and also anything you've got going social media wise as well, sir.
Okay, so you can find it anywhere, really. You know, you can listen on Spotify. I have like 5,000 people subscribe to my whatever it is, the playlist, I guess.
Right?
But you can get it on Amazon. You can get it online. You can buy it directly from Deco, and they have like special packages with a T-shirt, a poster, a pick, and in addition to the CD. And as far as social media, I have a Facebook page, which I look at every few days, not a whole lot. And people try to messenger me, and I'm like, I don't know. Just send me my website. You know, my website is albertbouchard.net. So I try and keep that. Yesterday, I just posted all the credits because a lot of people, you know, even when they ordered the CD, it hasn't. I kind of screwed up. I was out of town for a while, and when I got back, there was a whole pile of posters to be signed. Okay, it's my fault. They've got them now, so the packages are going out, but it's taken some time. So a lot of people just downloaded the album, or streamed it, or I don't know, whatever they do, you know, these days. But, you know, when you do that, you can't see who played what. So I have all the lyrics, all, you know, and some of the lyrics, even though they're old songs, some of the lyrics have changed, and I have all the credits of who played what. So, you know,
that's good. AlbertBouchard.net. We'll check that one out. And Albert, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to be on. I wish you continued success, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you, Cameron.
The best part of Halloween for parents is when your kids finally go to sleep and you can pick through their candy stash while getting lit. So what type of booze pairs best with Halloween candy? Well, a new survey found that wine is the number one pick. Most people think it pairs better with candy than beer or mixed drinks. Now, the poll also looked at what types of candy go best with wine. Chocolate-based candy got the most votes, followed by fruity candy and nougat-based candy. Sour candy ranked last.
We've got legendary horror actor, and I've got an acclaimed musician as well in there, and friend of the show, Bill Moseley. Always good to have him back each October. Going to talk about some new movies projects that are upcoming, and even one that's out. And Bill, always good to visit with you, sir.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Now, Bill, we talked about some new projects, Prisoners of the Ghostland. I know that you starred opposite of Nick Cage. That was that is available now. And first off, what is October and Halloween look different this year than last year? Obviously, a little more hopeful, right?
Yeah, you know, it's starting to warm up a little bit. I think people are still wearing masks and you know, being smart, but. Yeah, it is opening up and certainly a lot more friendly than it was last year. So I'm encouraged by it. I'm actually down here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, getting ready for an appearance at the Nightmares Haunted Trail, a haunted attraction up in Nakaina, North Carolina, over this coming weekend.
That's cool. Now, the movie with Nick Cage, how has the process on the filming changed? I mean, I know the horror is still there, but tell us how much you've had to adapt to the way the new shooting processes are.
Well, I think that the processes are in place really because, you know, of the litigious nature of our business, so that you know, no producer wants to be responsible for anybody getting sick, certainly, or hurt. So I think there are extra protocols in place. And it really comes down to vaccination and proof of vaccination. It's also, I think there is pretty much weekly testing, which is not good for those of us who don't like 7-inch swabs up our nostrils. you know, if it's all about keeping the, you know, the cast and crew healthy, I'm all for it.
Now, Prisoners of the Ghostland, I was told to ask you about working with a director in Japan and what that experience was like for you as well.
It was wonderful. I, you know, certainly hadn't met the director, Sion Sono, S-I-O-N-S-O-N-O. I had never met him before, but of course I had seen his movies because my buddy Reza Sixto Safai, who was the co-writer and one of the co-producers on the movie, and really the person that brought me to Sion's attention as a, you know, as a possibility to play the character of the governor in Prisoners of the Ghostland. And So I watched his movies, Sion's movies, and some of the movies like Cold Fish or Tag or Tokyo Tribe or Suicide Club. I mean, there are some amazing movies he's done. And I was really, really excited to be working with him. And when I met him, it was just it was a wonderful experience. I was fitted for my white suit, which I wear as the governor. And I met Sion in the town of Maibara, Japan, on the shores of Japan's largest freshwater lake, Lake Biwa, And Scion, I met at the wardrobe fitting. And he, you know, I got my costume on and pulled on my blood red gloves because I think I'm kind of capitalism or something with blood on my hands. And once I pulled on those red gloves, he looked at me with a big smile and went, "Governor." I was like, "Yeah, baby, let's rock." And he was just a lot of fun to work with. Nick Cage was a great guy. I really liked him a lot. He was really an actor, totally prepared, totally into it, you know, and worked well with everybody. He was a very cool and steady presence. It was fun because a lot of the notes of the director had to be translated by a translator who didn't always get it right. So I kind of had to figure it out just from, you know, gestures and tone and you know, a couple of takes every once in a while. But it was a wonderful experience. I'm so glad I did it. I'm glad we got it done before the pandemic shut things down. And it's a great movie. I hope you guys get a chance to see it, especially if you can see it on the big screen. That's the way to go because it's really an epic and it's very visual.
And I know you talked that you're out in getting ready to do an appearance. How has the convention circuit been this year around? I know last year it was pretty well completely closed. Has that picked up a little bit as well?
It has. It's picked up a lot more. And I have found, you know, oddly enough, but wonderfully enough, that the horror fans are, for the most part, the ones that got the vaccination. You know, it's so funny because I do, you know, selfies with people, and maybe I put my arm around them or they put their arm around me, and we take our masks off just to, you know, take a good picture. And the first thing I say to them is, you know, "I'm vaccinated." And they say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, me too." And it's just so funny how many horror fans prefer their horror on screen and not in the ER. So that's been actually, you know, that's been a real insight, is to see, you know, that the fans of a horror movies, you know, are really conscientious about that.
And I know you've also got going to be filming next month, starting a new one called Hayride to Hell. And Bill, tell us a little bit about the excitement starting into a new film as well.
Well, it's always good to be working, especially, you know, because, you know, it's who I am. It's what I do. I mean, it's fun to be on the autograph circuit and the convention circuit. But, you know, I do like to get in front of the camera and go for it. And Hayride to Hell stars me and Kane Hodder.
Oh, wow.
And Kane, I just saw Kane last weekend in Lexington, Kentucky at Scarefest. So it's always fun to work with him. I've worked with him a bunch of times, not only on screen, but also a lot of people don't know that Kane was the stunt coordinator on Devil's Rejects. And really did a great job. He does a great job in front of and behind the camera. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, again, Prisoners of the Ghost Land is available now. And look for Hayride to Hell. And, Bill, I always want to make sure and let folks know where they can keep up with all of your upcoming projects and the ones you've had in the past as well, sir.
I think the best thing to do is to just hit up my I have the same name, I guess, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. It's at Chop Top Mosley, ChopTopMosley.
Well, Bill, it is always great to visit with you, sir. Appreciate your time, and hope you have a great Halloween weekend, my friend.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. As I say, I'll be up in Nakina, North Carolina at the Nightmares Haunted Trail Haunt. And looking forward to anybody in the vicinity, come on in and bring Granny and the kids. and we'll have a real good time.
No, I'm not going to argue if you think ghosts are real, but I need receipts for some of the other things on this list. Because someone polled 2,000 Americans for Halloween and asked if they believe in the paranormal.
Now, they found that 63% of us believe in some type of paranormal activity. Over half of us think ghosts are real. And a surprising number of people think vampires and werewolves are real, too. And here's what the poll found. Number 1. Ghosts. 57% of Americans think they exist. 49% even said they've felt the presence of a ghost before. Number 2 was vampires. 22% of Americans think they're real, so just over 1 in 5 people. Number 3, werewolves, also 22%. Number 4, zombies, 22% again. You know, I'm starting to think 22% of us will believe in just about anything. Now, the poll also asked about non-Halloween stuff. 39% of us think aliens have visited Earth, 27% believe in Bigfoot, and 22% say the Loch Ness Monster is real. Now, 55% think that a full moon makes people behave in strange ways, 56% think some people can see and predict the future, and 51% think it's possible to read someone's mind.
Former Speaker of the House and best-selling author got a new book to talk about, Beyond Biden, Rebuilding the America We Love, that releases coming up November the 2nd. We've got Newt Gingrich with us today, and first off, Speaker Gingrich, always good to visit with you.
Well, listen, it's great to talk with you, and I remember fondly my recent visit to Oklahoma City, and I can just tell you that I think that Beyond Biden will relate directly to the people of Oklahoma, because they know that what's going on in Washington is not sustainable, and that we need to start thinking about how we're going to repair it once we get done with the big government socialists and the damage they're doing to the country.
And as we rebuild the America we love, Newt, obviously a lot of folks seem to have had lost hopes, and I'm sure that's one of the things. There's still hope out there, though, isn't there?
Well, that's why I wrote Beyond Biden. I wanted to get people to remember, you know, Jimmy Carter looked pretty terrible, and Ronald Reagan came along, and about 3 months later, things were dramatically better. So I don't think we should despair. We have to recognize this is a bad administration filled with people who are extraordinarily radical, that their belief in big government socialism just doesn't work in the real world, and that we have to defeat them and replace them, and then we got to go back to rolling up our sleeves and making America successful. But historically, we have a great track record of bouncing back, and I think that we'll bounce back after the big government socialists and the Biden administration leave town, and we'll look back on that as a temporary detour on the road to America's historic place, and which is to be the most prosperous and most successful and safest country in the world.
And what would you say that Biden being elected, what do you think that says about the place that America was in the first place, and maybe where they thought they were going?
Well, I think the election was rigged. I want to draw a distinction between whether or not it was stolen on election day and what was done over a long period of time. When it became obvious that Trump was going to win, as early as the day he was sworn in, the Washington Post was writing about impeaching him. The day after the election, in 8 different cities, left-wingers got together to talk about how to defeat him. The establishment on the left spent 4 years trying to drive him out of office, and you had people like Zuckerberg at Facebook who put an estimated $420 million into rigging the election and maximizing turnout in Biden precincts, not in conservative or Republican precincts. So you really can't tell in retrospect where the American people were. What you know is that this huge national establishment did all it could to defeat Trump. It did not actually change the country below that level. If you look at the House, for example, people thought Republicans would lose 25 seats, but with Kevin McCarthy's leadership, they had a positive program, what they called a commitment to America. They gained 15 seats. They didn't lose seats. And I think if we hadn't, frankly, thrown away the 2 Georgia seats, we'd have retained control of the Senate. So I think we picked up 1 governorship, and we picked up a bunch of state legislative seats. So the country at large is continuing to move towards a more low-tax, self-governing, limited bureaucracy system. even though in Washington and in the news media, all the emphasis is in the opposite direction.
And how do we keep on that direction whenever all of the information that we get is leaning the opposite way, Speaker Gingrich?
Well, but you're part of the answer to that. We have hundreds of radio talk show hosts. We have people who have blogs. We have people on Facebook. We now have conservative competitors to Facebook and Twitter that are growing up and that are presently going to create an alternative ecosystem. You know, if 335 million free people decide they don't want something that doesn't work like big government socialism, they'll eventually figure out a way to get rid of it. I mean, Ronald Reagan didn't have Rush Limbaugh. He didn't have Fox News. But we steadily pounded away, and I was part of that both as a candidate in the 70s and then working with Reagan when I was a junior congressman. And he understood that repetition mattered. I'll tell you, when you look at gasoline prices and you realize that that is a Biden tax, and you look at the warning that the cost of heating could be 50% higher this winter, and that's a Biden tax, and then you look at the New York Times yesterday, which said that this will be the most expensive Thanksgiving dinner in history. And I told people, that's not a big problem because you won't be able to afford the gasoline to go to your parents anyway. But you know, people look around in the real world and they realize this ain't working. And I think that will ultimately crush the left, because the problem is, as Margaret Thatcher used to say, the problem with socialism is you run out of other people's money to spend, and ultimately you just create a mess. And I think that's what we're seeing happen, both in places where they're dominant, like New York and Chicago and California, but also in Washington itself. Almost every major Biden policy now is a disaster. And that's a remarkable negative achievement.
And Speaker, what do you think a conservative leader is going to take to win the White House, say, whether it's in the next election or the election to follow? What do you think it's going to take from a conservative leader? What is America looking for?
I think we have to do two things. We have to convince the country that these are big government socialists and that their program just doesn't work. And whether you're pointing at the homeless or you're pointing at the border or you're pointing at inflation, I mean, you just go down the line. You're pointing at schools where kids aren't learning anything. I mean, it just doesn't work. So we have to win that argument. And then, frankly, we have to look to the governors who are doing a good job and the states that are doing a good job, and we have to find the policies that do work, and we have to be the positive. This is why my book is Beyond Biden, not Anti-Biden. My concern is that we find the policies that will help America grow and work, and that's our mission, is to defeat these guys, but then replace their policies with policies that really work. And if we do that, we'll govern for several generations.
And again, the book, Beyond Biden, Rebuilding the America We Love. And Speaker Gingrich, always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find more info about the book, obviously releasing on the 2nd, and then everything you've got going social-wise too, sir.
Right. Well, if they will go to Gingrich360.com, they can get sign up for free for 3 newsletters a week, 3 podcasts a week, and also a link to buy the book. So Gingrich360.com is the best way to keep track of everything we're doing.
All right. Well, again, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, it is always great to visit with you, sir. I appreciate you taking some time out and looking forward to checking out the book when it releases.
Great. Thank you very much. Take care now. Have a great day.
Now, this is good information for anyone who wants to eat the maximum amount of Halloween candy without dying. Yes, it's technically possible to overdose on it, but it would never happen because it's nearly impossible to eat enough all at once. Well, someone came up with a formula that tells you how many fun-sized pieces of candy you could eat in one sitting based on what a lethal dose of sugar is. It's 13.5 grams of sugar for every pound of body weight. For a 180-pound person, 5.4 pounds of straight sugar would do it. That's how much you would get in 262 pieces of fun-sized candy or 1,627 pieces of candy corn. Now you can calculate your own candy limit with this formula. Just multiply your body weight by 13.5. then divide by 9.3 grams, which is the average amount of sugar in a fun-sized candy bar.
Friend of the show, most definitely, Texas country artist, he's just country artist, singer-songwriter, Hayden Haddock with us. And Hayden, always good to visit with you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Now tell us, what's been going on in your world as of late? I know we've got the single to talk about, but I know that you've been doing some opening gigs and things have opened up almost completely. So I know that since we spoke last, life's changed a little bit for you.
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely keeping me busy. I've got a bunch of stuff going on. So, we've been touring like crazy. My booking agency has been keeping us super busy, so I can't complain there. We've been getting some great shows. We've gotten to do some more stuff with Kevin Fowler and a bunch of stuff with John Wolfe, bunch of shows with Steve Warner. That's been really cool. And then outside of that, we've just been writing new songs. And obviously, we've been in the studio a little bit, recording some new music, and just trying to gather everything together and playing for the future. Now that, like you said, everything's opening back up. So now we can kind of hit it again full force and try and get this the train rolling again.
And being a full-time college student on top of this, how much of a challenge has that been when school's been back in session? I mean, last year probably wasn't as much of a challenge, was it, being remote?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, last year, that's what I always say. That was probably like the only, positive of the pandemic was, since everything did go online. And then when we were able to start playing shows again, I could do class from anywhere and it wasn't a big deal. And then this semester, I guess most of the colleges have gone back to in-person, I would imagine, but obviously Texas A&M, definitely they pretty much wanted everyone back on campus. I think they ended up offering like less online options this semester because they just wanted everyone back on campus. And anyway, so this semester actually has probably been the toughest out of the, I guess, close to 4 years I've been juggling the school and music thing. And I don't know what it is. I think it's just the schedule that I had to have. I didn't have many timing options and whatnot. And of course, like right when this semester started, my booking agent and I and my team agreed to a bunch of shows during the week, not really thinking about my class schedule. And so, having to do the whole email the professor and try and give them the spiel about the music and hope they care, because 90% of the time professors could care less because, they think their class is the most important thing in the world. But luckily the one class, that's been giving me problems just in terms of attendance and stuff. Luckily that professor, she's been pretty cool about it all. So
that's cool.
It's definitely tough, but I'm getting it done at this point. It's, what is it? D is for diploma.
That's right. Now, Hayden, the new single, I know that you didn't write this one, but I know you felt an immediate kinship with it. And the songwriter, I know you guys have a bit of a kinship as well.
Yeah. So, new single, Wind It Down. It was written by, my producer and manager, Trent Willman. And then also another fellow, Texan and fellow Aggie, actually, Mr. Wynn Williams. They wrote that song together, I think back in January or something. And a few months back, me and Trent were sitting at his house and we had got done. I think I'd been in Nashville a few days and we had written, I think, 4 or 5 songs. And we were just sitting there kind of talking about, next steps for releasing new music and albums, singles, all this stuff. And finally, Trent pulled out his phone that's got only God knows how many, demos and rough cuts of stuff in there, as much as he writes. And he played me a few songs and then he played Wind It Down and, said him and Wynn wrote it and that Wynn just couldn't really see himself recording it. All that stuff. And, as soon as he played it, I fell in love with the song and, it just kind of made me think about the, I guess the meaning behind the song is kind of, like you always end up at the little dive bar, just drinking beer and BSing with your friends and all that stuff. And, made me think of being here in College Station. We've got a bar here called the Dixie Chicken. That's kind of a big deal here in College Station. It's been around since like 1974 or something like that. So it's very old and dive barish, and that seems to be where we always end up playing pool, getting pitchers of beer or whatever. And so that's what immediately clicked in my head, and yeah, I just fell in love with it. And the production on it, I think, turned out great. And we just thought, you know, after we heard the production on it, what the band came up with, you know, we thought it'd be a great first single. You know, for me, not having released new music in close to 2 years, you know, good upbeat, fun song. So hopefully everybody's enjoying it.
And how excited were you to have new music out there as well?
Yeah, that's definitely probably one of the best feelings, I would have to say, is, you know, getting new music out there. And especially, like I said, after, you know, almost 2 years, that's quite a while. But obviously our whole thing was just, you know, with the pandemic and all that stuff happening, you know, we just weren't in a super rush to throw out new music because we, you know, obviously, you know, I'd say probably 80-90% of this is built off, you know, live shows and live touring and all that stuff. And so without being able to do that, we didn't want to, you know, we didn't want to waste a release, I guess you could say. And so we wanted to wait until we knew we could get out there and play it live. And so that's what we did. And yeah, like I said, we've, you know, wind it down. Hopefully everybody's liking that. And I think it was a good choice. And then we've got another handful of singles that we're going to put out. You know, I think our plan is to do like one every 2 to 3 months or so. And then probably about mid 2022, we're going to shoot to have another full length record out. So we got quite a bit of music up our sleeve. So we're going to make up for the lost time.
You're going to get no sleep at all between the late night cramming and the practices and the shows and all that. Being back in school, what has that taught you about yourself as an artist? What has it maybe brought back to mind? Maybe helped you a little on the business side of things, maybe?
Yeah, it definitely does. And it, you know, keeps your mind sharp. But no, it shows that, you know, no matter, I guess, how hard something may be or what's put in front of you, you know, as long as you are willing to work for it, you can get it done. And, you know, that's kind of what I tell everybody is, you know, it sucks right now, you know, doing the school thing and trying to juggle it with music. You know, and there's definitely been times I've thought, you know, well, all right, if I'm, you know, if I'm getting my degree, maybe I should, you know, put the music, you know, or slow it down a little bit or something. But then, you know, when you really think about it, it's like, no, if you want it bad enough, you'll get it done. And, you know, luckily I'm at the point where I've only got about a year left or so. So I think I'm 2 hours away from ordering my Aggie ring. And when you order your Aggie ring, you know the end is in sight. So that's a good thing.
That is good stuff. So, now, the new male vocalist at the 2020 T3R Awards as well. What did that mean to you? What was your immediate reaction to that?
Yeah, that was definitely an awesome night and a good thing for me. You know, that was one of those deals. I think I told Jen like 2 weeks before that award show. You know, I knew I was well, actually I didn't know I was nominated until about 2 weeks before that award show. I had no clue. I think Jen originally told me I wasn't. She thought I wasn't nominated for anything, and then we come to find out somehow there was a mix up, and I was all this. I don't know, and so I ended up telling Jen, because if I remember right, that show was like during the week or something, and I had to be at class the next morning, and, you know, that was in Fort Worth. I'm in College Station, so I told her, I'm like, hey, I don't think I'm going to make it, you know, whatever. And she's like, I just have a feeling. I think you need to be there. And so, of course, I tried to keep it this low-key thing, and we went, and Trent ended up flying in and surprising me. And being there, and then my band guys ended up showing up, and you know I wouldn't want anybody there because I'd been nominated at these other shows and I never won anything, so I was like, ah, it's gonna, you know, same thing's gonna happen. And then obviously I won, and it was really cool, you know, because Trent got to present me the award and all that stuff. And so it was a really good overall night and good experience. And, you know, as me and Trent said that night was, hopefully it's the first of many, or wow, will be the first of many, is what he said.
That's so good stuff. Now the single, the upcoming dates, I know you still got some shows in there in between classes. Where is the best place? I want to make sure and remind our listeners, I should say, where they can keep up with everything with Hayden Haddock.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, follow me on all social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. We're working on getting the TikTok going. I'm not very good at it, so I've got people helping me with TikTok now. But that's all Hayden Haddock Music. And then the easiest thing to do just for everything is my website, haydenhaddock.com. That has links to all the social medias, music, tour dates, merchandise, everything is at HaydenHaddock.com.
There you go. Go Aggies, you said, right?
Exactly.
Gig 'em. Well, Hayden, always great to see you, brother. I wish you nothing but continued success. Get a little bit of sleep in between shows and all that. And look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 142nd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at gqwithcam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, visit our merch store where we've got hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, and much more at gqwithcam.com/shop. And if you have a special guest idea, just email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Well, thanks again to our good friend Brandon Allen for playing our music for us. He came up with the theme song all on his own. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your evening.